morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Sitting across from me is
Mike Cosentino.
And we made a commitment, I think, Mike, when we first started the show, almost 8 years ago, to focus on things like Social Security and Medicare periodically and try to get the word out of what happened. Because when we went on air, they were involved in a very intense campaign to claim that Social Security was about to collapse and stuff. And in fact, in my talking to younger people, Mike, I'd say probably a majority of them really do not think Social Security is going to be there for them.
It's really a difficult thing to get out of their heads, no matter how untrue it is. And our guest this morning
is Max Richman, and we've had Max on the show twice before.
From the Center of the Preservation of Social Security and Medicare from Washington, D.C.
Yes. Well, that was kind of a interesting introduction. So, Max, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's talk about Social Security. I'm joking a bit, but what should we talk about first, Mike?
Well, Max, you got an agenda here, because you got all the hot latest info, and that's what we need here. We're here, one of the reasons the show called Democratic Perspective does as Steve Williamson said, we do a show sometimes twice a year, maybe more, on Social Security and Medicare because it has a great interest to our audience. It says
right.
So.
Let's address what you Googled. Mike went out and Googled Social Security preservation, was it, Mike?
Right.
And what he got as result was a ton of anti-Social Security websites and stuff, people claiming
it's going to run out this year. Is what they said.
Mike says the Motley Fool, which is a financial advising thing, said that Social Security's ran out of money this year. Max?
Well, this goes to your comments at the opening here about younger people. It's unfortunate that they have become susceptible to some of this propaganda, all the myths about the program, and they're definitely out there, and they're incorrect. And hopefully this morning we can try to dispel some of those myths and even go to legislation that would help us dispel those myths. But I hear it all the time as well, from especially younger people, that they feel they're more likely to see a UFO or see Bigfoot than to ever get a Social Security check. That's absolutely wrong. The program is not going broke. There are long-range issues that need to be addressed, and there are some good solutions that I hope we can talk about. But the other, when I talk to younger people who are so cynical about ever getting benefits from Social Security, first of all, I tell them that's incorrect. Second of all, I try to explain to them that this program of Social Security is insurance. So regardless of when you retire, if you are a younger person, you're protected by Social Security in a form of survivor benefits, children's benefits, spousal benefits. A third of Social Security benefits right now go to non-retired workers, and they're in the categories I just mentioned. Finally, the point I try to use as an example is if you are a 27-year-old worker with a spouse and two children, you have right now, never mind what happens when you turn 66 or 67, you have right now about $500,000 in value of life and disability insurance should anything bad happen in the family. Someone, the breadwinner dies or becomes disabled. So it's important for people to understand that FICA stands for Federal Insurance Contribution Act. It funds old age survivor and disability programs. This is insurance for families that you're paying for. You don't know what will happen in the future. You don't know how long you're going to live. You're buying insurance for your family, and it's a pretty good deal.
It's a pretty good deal, and it was so important, Max. Like you said, I want to repeat it again because it's so important. A third of Social Security's funds go to a social safety net that keep people in this country from when they get hurt or when they get sick or when somebody they lose somebody. It keeps them from the dire poverty that can happen very often when those situations occur. This is a federal insurance program. Max Richman says it's a federal insurance
program.
Well,
it just is one. But, Max, maybe we can turn to it later, but I wanted to ask a question, which is how can we improve Social Security? Because it's what we've talked about before here. The direction for the entire Obama administration and before was how can we save Social Security by cutting its benefits?
Right. Yeah. We also want to know at the top of the show, changes in 2019. What's happening now?
Well, we have on the horizon a very positive approach to ensuring Social Security solvency for the long run. First, we should be clear that if there are no changes at all in terms of the benefits, the revenue, the program will be able to pay everybody who has qualified for benefits until the year 2034. So that's not a program that's bankrupt. Even if nothing happens, there will be about 80% of benefits will be paid for the next 50 or 60 years. So we don't want to get to 2034 and have a reduction of benefits by 20%. So something needs to happen, but also we need to realize the program is not bankrupt. It's not about to go over the cliff. And we have, 15, 16 years to make adjustments. Now, we don't want to wait till the spring of 2034, we need to do something now. What has been introduced in the House of Representatives is legislation, I believe it's H.R. 860. It's called the Social Security 2100 Act. It was introduced last week and in the Senate as well. And this legislation would bring the program into solvency until the year 2100, the rest of the century. That's why it's called the Social Security 2100 Act. So there was a press conference last Wednesday morning. I was honored to speak at that with quite a few members of Congress. 204 members, as of last Wednesday, had signed up to be co-sponsors. And two senators came over to the Capitol to participate, Senator Chris Van Hollen, Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut. They're sponsoring a companion bill in the U.S. Senate. Now, how does this legislation deal with the long-term solvency? Primarily, it would make adjustments in the cap on Social Security wages subject to the payroll tax. Right now, it changes every year, but in 2019, after you earn $132,900 in wages, you don't pay any more Social Security tax. So someone who's making $500,000, several million, stops paying at the same point as someone makes $132,900. Now, there are a lot of people aren't even aware that there's a cap.
Yep.
Because they pay on all their wages. They assume that's the way it works. So this legislation would keep the cap at what it is, and as I say, it moves up a little bit every year, but then resume collecting payroll tax on wages of $400,000 and above. And those people would also have an increase in their benefits, which is very important. The other revenue source is that there will be a 1.2% increase on payroll tax phased in over 23 years. So you resume the cap, payroll tax collection at $400,000 in wages, and there's a 1.2% increase phased in over 20 years. What that means is most people will have an increase in their payroll tax, other than those ones who are wealthy, making over $400,000, of about 50 cents a week. This, I think, is not a very heavy lift. It would ensure the program to be solvent for the rest of this century. It would also bring in enough revenue to increase the minimum benefit. It would bring in enough revenue to have a fairer and more accurate and more generous cost of living adjustment. And this is why I think it may be appealing to Republican members of Congress. It would reduce the tax on Social Security benefits. Right now, if you are taxed, if you are taxed on your non-Social Security income exceeding $25,000 an individual and $32,000 a couple in earnings, you are taxed on some of your Social Security benefits. The change in this law that I'm talking about would raise those thresholds from 25 to 50 and from 32 to 100,000 respectively.
That's
so
great.
This is, I think, a brilliant addition to this legislation because it reduces the tax on Social Security benefits once you start collecting, and it also brings some fairness into the revenue stream, makes the program solvent, improves the benefits. I think it's a package that most Americans would find very appealing.
Yes, to reiterate, these minor changes in this very valuable program will ensure its viability and survivability for a long, long time to come. It's such a part of the fabric of American life, and to have the other side be taking shots at it every few years is crazy, and I just don't get. I guess we have Ronald Reagan we have to thank for taxing our Social Security. Before that, it wasn't taxed.
That's right. And the tax on Social Security was increased. The actual tax on the benefits was increased in the early 1990s under President Clinton. The percentage was increased. So, you know, I the way I look at this is some of the problems that we have to address are bipartisan problems, and the solutions should be bipartisan solutions as well.
So this looks like a very good program, and it has several different elements. What you're doing is you're raising where you tax for Social Security, right? So if it's above $400,000, then you start taxing the income. It's at the same rate, right?
Right.
It just continues up there. And this will generate, with a couple of other changes, this will actually generate, Max, enough money to make Social Security solvent for the rest of the century.
Well, that's right. And two things important to keep in mind. Those people, if this became law, this legislation, Social Security 2100 Act, if it became law, it would affect 4/10 of 1% of wage earners. Those are the people that would pay additional payroll tax who are earning above $400,000 a year. 4/10 of 1%.
Wow.
And, you know, I have gone to hundreds of town hall meetings. I don't think there's anyone ever attended, and they're well attended, that would be impacted by this, because there really aren't, relatively speaking, that many people earning that amount of money. The second, and I mentioned this earlier, the second thing that's important to keep in mind, those people who would, under this bill, who would pay additional payroll tax on their wages because they're making a lot of money, they would have an increase in their benefits as well. That's very important to tie benefits to contributions. That's the way the program has worked. And I think that's one of the beauties of the program, that it is, has that feature to it. So these this proposal, I think, would garner the support of people of all political persuasions, Democrats, Republicans, Independents.
All right.
And you know, all the surveys I've seen, there's overwhelming support for protecting Social Security and improving the program. And this is a way to do it that is fair. And I'll also, one I should mention, you know, we started the conversation about young people being so cynical about getting benefits in the future. And I went through my litany of arguments about why that isn't true. The program isn't about to go broke, and there are benefits before reaching retirement age through the program. But this legislation would clearly show the program is able to pay not just through 2034, but for the rest of this century. And I think it would address that lie, that awful lie that is out there about Social Security not being there for younger people. I think it'd go a long way towards doing that and thereby building support across the board, across generations for the program.
That's the key, and exactly one of the things we're trying to do here on Democratic Perspective is do exactly what Max Richmond said from the center of the preservation of Social Security and Medicare.
There's a long-term, Mike, I think, campaign to convince young people that Social Security won't work in order to upend and weaken the program. And as I said to you last time, Max, and looking around people, wage earners in Sedona rather than wealthy retirees, many of the men and women that I worked with have nothing but Social Security to look forward with. They can't make enough savings. There's no pensions, et cetera, et cetera. There's no sick leave, there's so forth and so on. So all they have is Social Security. So for the question I've always wondered about, Max, and I think this sounds like a great program and this is what should be done, but Social Security doesn't really pay out enough money if folks really don't have any very large savings. I mean, you can go through, suppose you even say $75,000, you retire at 66, 67, and live another 20, 30 years. I mean,
it's not enough.
Yeah, it's not enough.
It's not enough. You know, the House Ways and Means Committee, under the leadership of the new chairman, Congressman Richie Neal, Massachusetts, will be holding hearings, I think, this Wednesday on the broader subject of retirement savings. And hopefully we'll address some of these other points. But, you know, Social Security, when it was started, was referred to by many as one leg of a three-legged stool. I'm sure you've heard that. The other two legs being savings and pensions. Well, those other two legs are more wobbly than ever. As you point out, people don't have very much in savings, generally speaking, and defined benefit pensions have largely disappeared. So it's incumbent upon policymakers to make sure that that leg, that one leg of Social Security, is as sturdy as it possibly can be. And the legislation that we've endorsed last Wednesday, goes a long way towards doing that. But it does not mean other issues should not be addressed, savings.
Well, that's it. Each of those things are hours of social conversation. In other words, why are there no pensions? Why have we let corporations deny the American working man and woman this vital part of the three-legged stool to be able to live in dignity for all of the years that you have. And then savings, you know, when you're spending in a place like we're doing this broadcast from, two-thirds of your income just in shelter, just in having a place to live. I think the rule is one-third of your income. There's easily people spending way more than that. Just to have a roof over their head in so many places in the USA. This housing crisis is real. It's very real here. It's real in a lot of places. And so savings becomes, The other reality that I see so often is between student loans, which is ridiculous. The younger generation paying back $1 trillion in student loans at this point in time, and paying and trying to find a living space that they can afford.
Yeah, you know, those are all vital issues.
How would you improve things, Max? I mean, I'm asking for, I know you're the chairman of the society. What's your personal opinion for how we can improve people's retirement? I mean, Social Security was intended as a supplement, right?
Absolutely.
It was a supplement. It was supposed to really help push you over and out of poverty.
But that's changed. People are living, as you both just said. I know, we all know lots of people who live on their Social Security. Whether that's $700 or $800 a month, they're still trying to live on their Social Security. Some people obviously get more than that. But so I want to talk about that. And Steve wants to talk about benefits.
The average benefit is about almost $1,400 a month. The average, which, of course, as you say, there are some that are, some people getting $600-$700 on a month. And by the way, if you participate in Medicare, which almost all Social Security beneficiaries do, your Medicare premiums come out of that money as well.
Yep.
Plus everything else that you've got to pay for. You know, one thing that I wanted to mention that often gets overlooked in these debates about Social Security. Where do you think this money goes that people receive? It's such a small amount compared to what is needed to get by every month. This money, the benefits are not saved. They go right into the economy.
That's right.
People spend this money. They spend it on the basics. So it's a real boon to the economy, and we're trying to get this across to members of Congress in their districts and in their states, U.S. Senator states. This money is vital to the economy, especially in a place like Arizona, where you have so many retirees. Billions of dollars flow into the economies of those states that help not just older people, but everybody in the area. And that's something that is overlooked. If Social Security is cut, it's going to not only hurt beneficiaries, it's going to hurt the economies of every community in the United States.
Max, we just got a raise, Max. Well, how much did we get? I'm serious. A lot of people, you know, will vaguely notice that, oh, my check is different, or, you know, the amount that deposited in my account. How much
in the last few years, it has gone, I think in 2010 and 11, it was zero.
Right.
In the last few years, it's been $12, $15, $18 a month, which is obviously better than zero.
Yeah.
But the reason it was zero is because the actual formula for determining what that cost of living adjustment is, that increase that is supposed to be there every month, that formula is flawed. And this legislation, the Social Security 2100 Act, addresses that problem by creating a different mechanism for determining what the COLA should be. And right now, it's the Consumer Price Index.
Right.
And that measures inflation's impact on a wage earner, does not measure the impact of inflation for an older person. And so, therefore, the market basket of goods and services that are examined to determine what has changed in the price from one year to the next does not put enough weight on those items that seniors rely on, which is, as you know, very different from a younger person. So I think the starkest example of the flaw in this methodology is in those years, I believe it was 2010 and 11, when the COLA was zero. The main reason it was zero is, if you remember, gasoline prices dropped dramatically, and the weight on the formula of gasoline was such that it pushed the COLA down. The amount down to where it was zero. Now, maybe that formula is applicable to a wage earner who's using a lot of gasoline,
yeah,
driving
truck drivers
back every day, dropping kids off at school.
Right.
Seniors don't use that much gasoline, not the way wage earners do. So that applying something like that to a COLA, which is supposed to keep a Social Security beneficiary the benefits up with inflation, is obviously flawed. There needs to be an increase in the weight on health care. Seniors depend on health care much more than younger people. There are, as you know, Medicare is a great program. We support it. It doesn't cover everything. It doesn't cover vision, dental, hearing. Those things are out of pocket, and those things keep going up. So this bill will create a consumer price index for the elderly. It will have a measure of inflation that puts the appropriate weight on those items, goods and services that seniors rely on, so that the purpose of a COLA is met, and that the COLA will be more adequate, will be more realistic.
Will the bill help folks who are getting closer to the minimum amount of Social Security?
It will. The minimum benefit, about, not a lot, but about 2%. You know, when you're living on Social Security from check to check, any increase is going to be very welcomed. And the features of this program, extending the solvency, a more a fairer cost of living adjustment, boosting the minimum benefit, these are things, every poll we've done, and we've done many of them, people around the country, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, want Social Security to be updated. You know, I at the press conference last Wednesday, I read a quote from President Roosevelt. In 1939, he signed the first of many amendments to the Social Security Act. And he said that periodically it will be necessary to make adjustments, I'm paraphrasing now, to the Social Security Act to keep up with changing conditions in the country. So the last time there were any changes, substantial changes to Social Security, happened in 1983. No changes since then. I mean, if you, whatever you were spending money on in 1983, whatever it is, it's gonna cost more in 2019. But it's time to make these adjustments to the program.
Just real 2% of $800 is $16, by the way, and not a huge increase. But as you said, when you're trying to live on $800, $16 it helps. And part of the reason, Max, as we started to talking at the beginning of the show, when you have the other side, when you have the Republicans trying to eliminate to privatize, to do whatever they want to do to Social Security, you know, every few years, that's when you get silly situations like this where you don't change a vital program since 1983 because you got these guys, George Bush did a huge push. The social media is giving Nancy Pelosi credit for saving the last time the Republicans went after it hard publicly. Was the Bush administration,
right.
and Pelosi managed to stave off any major privatization at the time. We know why they want to do it. They want for the motley fools of the world.
It's ideology, you think, Mike?
Well, they will benefit from investing Social Security funds,
absolutely,
and put them at risk in a very serious way.
So think about this.
Yeah. Think of, you know, if someone's Social Security money was in the stock market, just in the last year, there'd be a lot of nervous people seeing what had happened to their Social Security. And back in 2008 and 2009, when the stock market dropped precipitously, we at our organization, we have a 401k for employees. I started calling my 401k my 201k because I lost about half of it. And yes, that has come back, and now and then it's gone the other way in the last 6-7 months. But the point is, you don't know when you're gonna where that market is gonna be when you retire, or when you need survivor benefits or spousal benefits. You don't know where the market's gonna be. With Social Security, you know what your benefit is gonna be. It may not be adjusted adequately. It is not adjusted adequately for inflation as it is, but at least you know you can count on it. Anybody who has ever qualified for Social Security has received those benefits in full. And you know, we're looking at a program that has been around for close to 100 years.
Wow.
And think about that. Most federal programs, I worked on Capitol Hill for 16 years before I came to the National Committee. And almost every year, federal agencies will have to come back to Congress because they need more money. And they request supplemental, emergency supplemental funding. This program has never run out of money. Everybody that has qualified has been paid their benefits. So you would think, based on that record, there would be more recognition of how solid this program is. But when President Bush was reelected, I remember this so clearly because we were in our boardroom, the staff, watching President Bush the day after he was reelected in 2004. And he came up to the microphone, and the first thing he said was, "I have earned political capital in this campaign to be reelected, and I'm going to use that political capital to privatize Social Security."
Yep.
Well, we about fell off out of our chairs. We had no idea that was his priority, and it was a struggle because he embarked on town hall meetings. I think it was 30 town hall meetings to make the case, and we as an organization, the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, followed him often in person. It took us a little while longer to get there because we didn't have Air Force One. We followed him wherever we could, in person or through the media, and we defeated that.
Excellent.
We defeated that proposal, and to the point where there was never even a vote on it, because we made such a, I think, a strong argument, and Leader Pelosi, as you said, led the charge on that, of how big of a mistake this would be, and history has borne us out.
What do you think was your strongest argument against it, Max? Was it the boondoggle that the financial advisors would get, or was it other structural problems?
Well, you know, that was part of it. The putting this money at risk, I think, was the biggest successful point that we made. This money would be put at risk, subject to the whims of the stock market, whether it was all of the Social Security program or part of it, and we could not rely on that program anymore to be there when someone needed it, when someone retired or needed other benefits that are available through the program. And, the Social Security program, administrative cost, the amount of money it cost to actually run the program, all those offices around the country, the staff, the computers, is 0.9%.
Wow.
Of the cost of the program. And a lot of that comes out of the program itself. A lot of the administrative cost comes out of the program. You are not going to get an investment company to handle that amount of money for 0.9%. It's going to be much, much more than that, because they're not in the business of providing a benefit. They're in the business of making money.
Exactly.
They want to capitalize on this amount of money.
Oh, yeah. It'll go 2-5% in no time, so they can get more.
Yeah.
Well, so who's going to oppose the new measure, the 2100 Act?
I haven't heard a lot of opposition. Our challenge will be to get Republicans to sign up. And I think, as I mentioned, one of the attractive features hopefully for Republicans in Congress is that the tax on Social Security benefits would be reduced, as well as all of the positive things I mentioned. So, you know, we're looking for Republicans. We're focused on a few that we think might be interested in supporting this legislation. I know there will be hearings in the House. There will be a bill that passes the House, and we'll have to work on the Senate. Of course, there's always an election around the corner, and seniors vote. And we're going to make sure that when people who in Congress who are not supporting this go to hold their town hall meetings, that there will be voices at those meetings urging them to take a hard look at this legislation as a way to make sure the program continues for the rest of the century. And I think, you know, I am optimistic that we could get some form of this legislation that may be changed as it goes through the process signed into law, which would be a huge deal.
Well, that's what I want to reiterate, Max, is that, I'm sure you'll agree that what can the average citizen do to especially the average Social Security recipient, or you know somebody that benefits from getting maybe some of the social safety net, what can they do? They can do exactly what Max just said. They can put a little pressure on their right. It's a simple thing. It's a positive thing. You can send an email to your Republican representative or your Democratic representative just to remind them that you support Social Security. You know it's going to be around. We need it. It's just to remind them that the electorate is aware of messing around with Social Security. So if you're a Social Security, if you know somebody that lives in another state that has a senator that is on the is thinking about this, or is any Republican senator, any, it can come from anywhere. People like Max who work in D.C. Know the lay of the land, and they know who's might favor it and who's not, who's going to be absolutely against it. But your senator, your representative, put a little pressure on him. Make sure they know that you're aware of the changes in Social Security and how vital this program is.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go.
That's exactly those are exactly the approaches that should be taken. All members of the House are up for re-election every 2 years. In your state, you have one senator, McSally, who's going to have to run for a full term in less than 2 years, a year and a half. She needs to hear from all of those people in Arizona. I know there are a lot of them who count on Social Security, who want to make sure it's there well into the future. And I hope during her town hall meetings and meetings with her constituents and campaign events, as she gets closer to running for a full term, that seniors and younger people will make this point.
Yes, and let her know it. Guys, Matt Martha McSally is the senator for the entire state of Arizona. We don't divide up the state. It's not a region. If you're a Democrat, if you're a liberal, if you're a conservative, you can let Martha McSally know that her vote should go for this change. The Social Security 2100 Act, or as you said, it's House Resolution 860. Coming up, proposed in the new Democratic House.
So, Max, you don't see a lot of organized opposition to this amendment, which is very broad and seems very good, to be honest, in my opinion. It seems like a great act because it touches and works with all these different aspects of Social Security.
Yeah. I don't see any organized opposition. I haven't heard much negative about it. What we need to do is generate support, especially among Republicans. And I know Congressman John Larson, who's the sponsor of this bill, he's been working. He's very persistent. He's been doing everything he can to encourage Republicans to sign up. And I think once a few do, I think that will open the door to others endorsing the bill. And let's not forget that President Trump, during his campaign, there were 17 Republicans running for the nomination in 2016. And there were many debates. I think I watched all of them. That was an ordeal, but I watched them all.
Yeah, we're feeling sorry for you just hearing that, you know.
But the point is that President Trump is the only one of those 17 who said over and over again, I am not going to, I'm going to protect Social Security and Medicare. So, you know, I have actually written a letter. You know, the State of the Union is finally happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I have written a letter to the president urging him to fulfill his campaign promises, and especially, I know we're talking about Social Security, but especially when it comes to the Medicare program, there's a lot of activity, a lot of interest in bringing down the cost of prescription drugs, and I pointed out in my letter, which was delivered, I think, Friday to the president, that during his previous two State of the Union addresses, despite his pledges to protect Medicare from cuts and to take on the pharmaceutical industry, that hasn't really happened yet. And so I'm hoping that in this State of the Union, the president will realize that these are important issues.
Yes.
Republicans have, for the first 2 years, threatened to privatize these programs, to cut them, and hopefully he'll make some positive comments that will protect people, seniors living on fixed incomes, who the average benefit of older people is $26,000 a year, and Medicare households spent more than two times the average American household on out-of-pocket health care costs, despite Medicare. So we're really hoping that we're going to be glued to the television during the State of the Union, hoping that the president will defend seniors' income and health security.
Yes, and exactly, Max. I hope that the State of the Union, is, as we know, is another opportunity for this man to lie to us. But in this particular case, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, whose representative we have been listening to for the last 45 minutes, the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, you can find it in Washington, D.C. Max Richmond is the representative we're talking to, and he'd be happy to hear from you. Be it positive or negative, if you want to know more about what's going on with Medicare in 2019, there have been some changes. There are things going on behind the scenes, I believe. At least insurance companies who've been handling Medicare have changed some things, and you might want to talk about that. We also want to talk about our support from our friends at Democrats of the Red Rocks. They do have their breakfast this month. Their February breakfast will be Thursday, February 21st. Terry Goddard will be there, a good old friend of Sedona's and of Democratic Perspective. Terry Goddard will be there to talk about outlaw dirty money, an important campaign. It's exactly what it sounds like. He chooses to call it, Terry Goddard calls it outlaw dirty money, but it's to put limits on outside money that have been changing the face of Arizona elections now for a long time. He's going to start that campaign again. He's going to be talking about it right here in Sedona on Thursday, February 21st at 8:30 a.m. at the old Sedona Bar and Grill for the Door Breakfast. You might want to check that out. We want to remind you that this podcast and all our podcasts, all our shows, for many years now, are on VVID.org. You can catch this show. If you missed any of it, you want to hear it again, send it to someone. Catch Democratic Perspective on VVID.org. Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.